There's a lot going on with the health threats and concerns about the coronavirus or COVID-19 impacting so many different parts of our lives. This is Lisa Berry, and to share some of the latest information about that is epidemiologist and Eastern Michigan University Associate Professor of Health Administration, Dr. Beverly Mihelko. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
How quickly is this situation changing?
So much of it is changing very, very quickly as we learn more and more about the cases that are being identified not only locally, but certainly regionally, across the country, and globally. We have got to be prepared to be able to adjust our processes, to adjust the way we try to mitigate this outbreak as it goes forward.
We here at WEMU are really concerned about keeping listeners updated on how it impacts them and how they can slow the spread. What would you recommend?
Well, we need to follow very carefully the guidelines that are being presented to us by our local, our state, and certainly national health authorities, including the CDC and Michigan Department of Community Health, as well as the local county health departments. And those include keeping a distance, the social distancing we keep hearing about, not congregating in large groups. If you know someone who is ill or has been ill, certainly not, certainly distancing yourself from them. Also, hand hygiene is number one. This is always an important means of preventing transmission of a variety of diseases that we are faced with on a routine basis. So this is really nothing new. We should be washing our hands frequently with soap and water as often as possible for at least 20 seconds. If hand washing is unavailable, then certainly using hand sanitizers. And I know that the stores are running low on hand sanitizers. You can go to the CDC website and find a recipe to make your own hand sanitizer using 70% alcohol and aloe gel.
Good to know. And then we're coming up on the weekend. Should we stay home or is it safe to go out?
Well, you have to assess your own risk. Certainly if you're elderly, 60 and over, if you have an underlying health condition, a chronic condition such as liver disease, kidney disease, diabetes, lung disease such as COPD or asthma, you're going to be at higher risk for this disease. So certainly assessing what you mean by going out, certainly if you need to go to the store to pick up some groceries or supplies, by all means. But of course, use your hand sanitizer.
Would you wear gloves? Would you go that far?
I would not wear gloves.
No?
No, but do not touch. It's really hard, but the more you think about it, the easier it is to do, and that is to not be touching your eyes, nose, or mouth, rubbing your nose, etc., and washing your hands frequently and encouraging, especially parents of young children. That's a good time, a teachable moment to teach them how to do proper hand washing and why it is so important all the time.
Let's talk germs. What surfaces do they live on, or how exposed to them are we?
Well, some germs are more fragile than others. We know that there's been certainly a lot of talk about how to sanitize our environments, our work settings, our homes. We understand, at least what we know about the organism so far, that COVID-19 is not readily transmitted through contaminated surfaces. It's mostly transmitted, primarily transmitted, through droplet contact and direct contact with someone who has symptoms of disease, coughing, sneezing, certainly kissing, hugging. Even when we speak, we are releasing small particles of aerosol particles, and we need to not get so close to people. So keeping a good 6 feet apart from the next closest person.
And if those germs are transmitted, does the person have to be infected? Or sometimes people have it and they don't even know it.
That is a very good question. We are, of course, many people, I believe, walking around right now with COVID-19. Either they have no symptoms or they may acquire the disease and have very mild symptoms. There is only one study that I saw that indicated that people may be able to transmit this disease or the infection in the first day or two when they are, coming down with the disease before they have symptoms. But that's only been one study, so we just don't know enough about it. People are primarily infectious when they have their symptoms, the cough, the fever, in coughing and sneezing in general.
We've been hearing concerns about people being asymptomatic. That means you don't know you have the coronavirus, but you're saying that's
correct.
Not been that well proven?
It has not, because it's because we don't have the data. without massive testing, meaning testing people in communities with something we call in epidemiology surveillance, doing broad testing to get an idea of how many people have really been infected with this organism but have not developed an acute disease or an acute infection with symptoms. So we just don't know at this point in time, something yet to be learned about.
How did this happen? Where did coronavirus even come from?
The coronavirus is believed to have come from bats in Southeast Asia, in China specifically, specifically this market where wild animals, including bats and other animals, are purchased and slaughtered and eaten, in some cases uncooked, and the sanitary or lack of sanitary conditions in that environment, the virus was able to jump from infecting only animals to adapt to being able to infect the humans, the human host. And so that's why this is called a novel strain. Our bodies have never seen it before, so we have absolutely no immunity.
But where do the bats get it from?
The bats. It's an organism that is common in the animal population.
Okay.
It is one of their organisms. That organism jumped to a human host.
And we're hearing a lot about social distancing now. And I believe as an epidemiologist, that's a term you use frequently, relatively new to us. What exactly does that mean?
Social distancing simply means, again, this focus we have right now of not congregating in large groups. I know that last night the governor put a ban at this point on any group over 250. So people should not be congregating in large groups.
That is now illegal. Yeah, on the state level.
Essentially, yes,
yeah.
Because she's now banned it. It's not just a recommendation. She had a recommendation out earlier in the week that said people should not congregate in groups over 100, but that was a recommendation. And I was pleased to see that she moved to a ban on larger groups. And as you have seen, you know, sporting events, the theaters, musical concerts have been postponed or canceled, you know, indefinitely, so that people aren't congregating in large groups. And also within the household, if someone does have some early signs or symptoms and it's unclear whether this might be a COVID-19 or not, just keeping your distance from them and just providing supportive care at that point in the home environment. So coming up with a plan in the home so that if someone does come up with symptoms, how are you going to kind of separate them? How are you going to clean the environment so that, you know, everyone isn't exposed to their, you know, coughing or sneezing?
How do you know when to quarantine or not quarantine?
Well, I was reviewing that again this morning on the CDC website because this is a fluid situation, and even the recommendations that healthcare professionals are relying on can change. Sometimes they can change within a day. So for quarantine, it really is people who know they've been in very close contact with someone who's been diagnosed with COVID-19 through a laboratory test. But then you would want to quarantine for 14 days. And the reason is, you know, we're looking at a range of time when someone will develop symptoms. The average length of time, something we call the incubation period, mm-hmm. from the time you're exposed to the time you develop symptoms is about 5.1 days. But the 97% of people have developed symptoms within 11 days. So it's still a pretty long period of time from exposure to a person developing signs and symptoms of this disease.
What if you're walking around and you have a little runny nose or you're sneezing a couple of times? What's your reaction to that?
Just continue to monitor your symptoms. Really, the calling card for taking the next step in calling your healthcare provider with certainty would be developing that fever.
A fever.
The other symptom is chest tightness, shortness of breath.
Okay, fever, chest tightness, shortness of breath, things to look out for. Your advice on traveling at this time?
It's certainly a personal decision. Obviously, some of those decisions are being made at a national level in terms of international travel. Again, if you're a person at high risk, you're 60 and over, 65 and over, you have an underlying chronic disease, I would not be getting on an airplane going anywhere, whether domestically or internationally, because as we know, there are places in the United States that have much greater spread of this disease within their communities than we currently have here in the greater Detroit area.
Dr. Beverly Mihelko, an epidemiologist and an Eastern Michigan University Associate Professor of Health Administration. Thanks for joining us here on WEMU.
Thank you so much for asking me.